Welcome to Mentoring Moments. Mentoring Moments is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast. It is composed of clips taken from Jason's one-to-one and group mentorship sessions. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome guest mentor Joe Fox to the pod. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason. I appreciate it.
Mate, it is my pleasure to have you along for the ride today. I think we've been talking about organizing one of these conversations for at least a year, maybe even longer. And we've been connected online, I think, for going on 5 years now.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And I feel like we've always interacted with each other's content and always enjoyed each other's content. So it's fantastic to be able to actually properly jump on here. And I must say, it's a podcast I've wanted to be on for some time. So thank you for having me.
Mate, it's so true how I really, your content, both professional and personal, because we're also connected on Instagram, and a lot of your personal content, you're a pretty transparent, upfront, open guy, wear your heart on your sleeve, a bit like me. And I feel like we've got so much in common. We've almost lived parallel lives. And it's so interesting. Wife from the area that I grew up, and we've had so many overlaps over the years as I've gotten these little peeks into your life. And I love that about you. I love the fact that you are so transparent. You are so honest. Like, nothing is off limits. You've always been super open. You've always been super helpful. I've seen you in the content on LinkedIn, et cetera. I've seen you reach out to people. I've seen you in comments helping people. I've seen you putting yourself out there on a limb on behalf of the brands that you represent. And you come from this super strong partnerships in tech background, not necessarily exclusively in e-commerce, but heavily related tangentially to e-commerce at least. And so it feels in many respects like we've lived parallel lives.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I must say that those things that you mentioned that you respect about me are very much the same as I respect you, Jason. I think the content that you've constantly put out there for audiences, whether it's B2B, D2C, tech, anything, agency, it's all valuable. And I really appreciate that, for one, because I think too often people are transactional, and it's all about, I'm only going to give advice if it's this. And I also love the fact that it's straight to the point. It's very direct. You're very, I guess, opinionated, same as me. And I think that's important these days. I think a lot of people will toe a line publicly just to appease everyone when it's not what you believe or what you stand up for. And I really respect that about you.
Thanks, mate. Thank you. I really appreciate the kind words. And yeah, definitely, I feel the same. I feel the same kinship, that's for sure. And what I wanted to talk to you primarily about today is a shift, like a quantum. It's not just a small shift. It's literally a quantum shift in the way that tech partnerships, whether that be between a vendor and an agency, between a tech vendor and another tech vendor from a strategic partnership perspective, whether that be between agencies and customers, tech vendors and customers / merchants. I just feel like the way that partnerships, that even that terminology, the meaning of that terminology has changed quite a lot over the years. From an outsider's perspective, now I've never been a partnership manager, but man, have I been part of a ton of partnerships in our space over the years, both as an agency, having partnerships with tech vendors, working brand side and having lots of tech partnerships, having lots of agency partnerships, being part of consulting to technology vendors and helping them develop their partnership model, both with merchants as well as with strategic technical partners. But what I'm seeing as an outsider looking into this is that the whole concept of partnerships has changed quite dramatically in the last 20 years in particular. But if we just look at pre-COVID to now, the way that partnerships are evolving in our space has changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And I think there's a lot of really good points that you've covered there to mention. I think one thing that I have noticed, and if we speak specific, and I'm probably going to go a little bit all over the place here, but I'll try and make as much sense as possible. But if I look at things and how they were pre-COVID, And it was very, I'm seeing a shift of a comeback to a little bit around that, particularly around in-person events, strategic in-person events, whether it be an agency running event to get more merchants, whether it be tech partners doing the same. Obviously, a lot more in-person events. I think as we're recording, we've got eTail West happening very shortly, Shop Talk happening very shortly. The list goes on and on, particularly in North America. And I know back home, we've got Retail Global and all of those sort of things happening. So I think the human element is such a part of partnerships that I think people who are doing partnerships really well understand, and people who are not doing partnerships well do not understand. And I think it's very interesting, as you said, there is a monumental shift. There's a tide pulling everything into the direction that it should go. And I think a lot of brands that aren't doing it properly are probably, unfortunately, some of these brands we're seeing do layoffs and that sort of thing at the moment. I really think partnerships is so crucial for both agency, tech, vendors, and the ones not doing it right, unfortunately, are paying the price at the moment.
And you make such a great distinction pre and post COVID. The great partnership managers or partnership leaders of this world, and I would put you in that category. The people like Cam from over at Outgoalie, you look at Kate from SearchSpring, there's certain people that I would say are, I don't want to say old school, but they've been around this game for a really long time, and they understand really the long game of partnerships. And yes, what I've seen, because I get partnership pitches probably at least 2 to 3 times a week, cold outreach, both via email and cold DM on LinkedIn from tech vendors that want me to become a partner of theirs. And so they say, hey, look, we've got this tech. We think you'd be a great fit to be a partner of ours. Could we tee up a virtual coffee? So I get these, or a variation of that type of message. I get probably 2 to 5 of those every week, week in, week out, and have done for the last 3 years of doing this. And in fact, it probably happened even more when I was in the agency space. And I've seen a very distinctive shift in the partners that came into the industry, or the partner leaders that came into the industry during COVID, where they didn't have a background in any kind of in-person anything. And so they thought, oh, this is the only way we can do this. We can do cold outbound prospecting effectively, as opposed to what I like to think of as cold relationship building, which is what you should be aiming for, in my opinion. That's what makes a fantastic partnership leader, is somebody who genuinely likes people, who genuinely likes building friendships and relationships. And hey, if that translates into some business at some point in the future, some undefined point in the future, then fantastic. But at the end of the day, it's about relationships first. And sure, we all have to make a living. And sure, if you're working in the partnership space and you're hired as a partner manager, then you know your KPI typically on the number of partners that you onboard per month on average, how much recurring ARR do they bring to your business? And there's all these KPIs that cascade down from that. But ultimately, if you are playing a short-term game as a partnership manager, you are cutting off your nose to spite your face, based on what I have seen, especially now as of 2024. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Jason. I think you mentioned some really good names there in terms of Kate Massey from SearchSpring. Awesome example. Great friend. I'm sure great friend of us both. And I feel like Kate really has that recipe for being the sort of perfect partnership leader, and leader in general in e-com and tech. But I think the defining thing that a lot of people forget, it's like the same thing as when I talk to people about social media. It's like social media is social. Be social. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. I think partnerships, people look at it, and a lot of C-suite and VC and all of that sort of thing, unfortunately, look at partnerships, as you said, as this business development channel that we need to just absolutely hammer upon and try and get as much out of as possible. But it doesn't work like that. As to your point, it really is about building long-term relationships with other leaders, with other experts in the space. The amount of help that you're able to provide to people by being in partnerships is one of my favorite parts of doing it. And I think what I've found, and people that you've mentioned, the really good partnership leaders that I see tend to have an entrepreneurial flair. It's like this ability to wear multiple hats, the ability to put relationships first, the ability to help before necessarily helping yourself, the ability to think strategically, the ability to pull together events. Like, partnerships do so many events. Like, it's part and parcel, whether it's online webinars, whether it's offline and it's a gigantic dinner for a whole bunch of merchants and partners. Something will always go wrong. It's like at a dinner party or a wedding or anything, something always goes wrong. Things don't go smoothly, but the ability to be able to iron those things out along the way, being able to relate to a CS team, all of those kind of skills and communication skills and relationship building skills are just so important. And I think one philosophy that I've always tried to employ, and I think this is something that, you know, people that you mentioned, such as Kate, employ very well, is really like helping, but not doing it to get something back. It's just being genuine and actually helping and reaching out. And there's some great networks that are built through these partnership things. One example is Sarah Parita from Yotpo. She's put together that awesome Smartnerships channel. The amount of advice and help in there and how much everyone genuinely is striving to help people in there. For example, people who've unfortunately been laid off, who don't deserve it or any of those things. Everyone really jumps in there and helps each other. There's never any, oh, you're from an opposing competitive tech. It's nothing like that. The partnership and the relationships element comes first. And I'm really proud to be a part of that community. And having been an agency owner, I owned a very, well, I would say relatively successful agency that I was able to scale and exit in Australia. And we did some amazing things at that agency, but I often reflect back to the partnerships I had then and what were the ones that were best and why were they best and why did I want to work with those particular vendors? And I always try and employ that to my own thinking and to get that group think happening with my team or the team that I'm building wherever I am at the particular time, because it's so easy to succumb to some of the pressure around KPIs and OKRs and everything. But if you do that prematurely, as you said, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. Long-term relationships is where it's at.
And for me, whether it's AJ Uloa, he's been in the partner space for many years. I met him originally when he was at BigCommerce in Sydney. When I think back to all the people that I'm still pretty close friends with today in the industry who have at one point or another been connected with me via some kind of partnership via the company they have worked for and the company I have worked for at the time, when I think about those relationships that have lasted, they are all people that I actually genuinely enjoy hanging with, that I enjoy going out with, that I enjoy being at a dinner with, that I enjoy their conversation, that I enjoy what they're doing in their life. They're interesting people. They're engaging people. They're interested in me and what's going on in my life and asking me questions about how did this American guy come to be in New Zealand and then work across clients in Australia and then what made him go then to Mexico. When I think about people that I feel the closest to from a partnership perspective that I would now call very professional friends and colleagues, I think about that and I try to tug on the thread that's common amongst all that group of people. And there's probably, I would say there's maybe around 15 to 20 people that I would put into that bucket that maybe I've known for 10 plus years through some form of partner engagement, but yet I'm still closely connected to today. And we watch each other's movements and we encourage each other. We help each other. If someone's looking for a job and I know someone, then I'll make an introduction. Those things, in every single case, they are people that I genuinely enjoy spending time with outside of work, outside of the work environment. So that's maybe going to a conference together and hanging out and having a drink or whatever case may be. And I don't want to make this about booze, but let's be honest that it is a lubricant. It is a social lubricant. And most people that I know that are really good in the partner space do drink alcohol. They don't have to, but certainly it's a social lubricant. But regardless of whether they drink or whether they don't, they are good in social situations. They are naturally inquisitive. They are naturally curious. They are naturally supportive. They are naturally engaging. They're really transparent. They're really open people. They're an open book, so to speak. And And they encourage you to be the same. They encourage you to want to talk to them. They encourage you to want to share what's going on in your life outside of the work environment. And they actually genuinely not just act like they care about what's going on in your personal life, but they actually genuinely do care about what's going on in your personal life and how they can maybe contribute to that or connect with you when you're in a given town. And let's say you're on a holiday, but you happen to be where they are. Then, hey, let's catch up. Let's have a drink. Let's swap war stories. Let's encourage each other. Let's give each other the intel of what's happening in our world that might be able to benefit each other, just to keep each other up to speed with what's happening in our technical world. So I feel like I wouldn't say you have to be extroverted, but you have to have extroverted tendencies to be a good partner person. Just because you actually have to genuinely enjoy people. Otherwise, you're going to really freaking struggle in any kind of partnership role, would be my take.
Yes. No, I couldn't agree more. I think some of those busy weeks when you're particularly building out partnerships programs, you might conversate with 40 different people in a week, and that's not uncommon. So you've got to have a great memory. You've got to care. You've got to actually want to work with these people, because if you don't care about people or you're not curious about people, you will just not enjoy this and you will burn out. So it's interesting you say the extrovert comment, because I used to feel when I was younger, I was very much just an extrovert full stop. Now I've realized I'm an introverted extrovert. And I think I love being able to care and be social and all of those sorts of things, but the introvert part is what allows me to go back and think about things strategically. How can I help more? How can I care more? And to that point, it's just so touching how supportive that community really can be. And I keep referring to Sarah's Smartnerships as an example of that. But the level of support and care that people give in that group, a perfect example is me relocating to Austin from Brisbane. And the amount of support I received from the local Austin community here has been amazing. And it's like the advice that you get given from particularly all partnerships people. And we may work at somewhat competing companies, but none of that matters, because the relationship really does come first. And I think now that I'm able to give my small bits of advice about relocating to the US or things around visas or any of those sorts of things, I find it really good that I'm now able to give that back. And I think if I had to summarize what we both just said, it's really, I think, the nurturing, caring component, and then it's the curiosity component. It's, you have to be a curious person, because if people don't interest you, you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah. And how do you start to think about, because with most vendors of, let's say, technology, because that's really where I think partnerships can really shine. Sure, you can have agency partnerships and you can have merchant partnerships, et cetera. But I think vendors of technology in particular, they've got a big job ahead of them in terms of the kind of partnerships that they have, because they have to go both broad and they have to go deep, right? They have to, in most instances, they have to pitch themselves to merchants, right? They have to have some sort of sales motion of some variety, some sort of business development motion. And that oftentimes can be led via partnerships, right? So oftentimes these technical, these technical vendors will have some sort of direct go-to-market motion of some variety around name recognition, around conferences, around speaking, around content that they put out, white papers, whatever it might be, gated usually, which is just rubbish, I think. But oftentimes these technical vendors, they absolutely rely on the channel that interacts with the merchant the most. They rely on that channel, right? So they are very reliant on both landing agency partners who are going to promote and build a practice around that technology, build a capability around that technology, and be an evangelist for that technology with their merchant clients. And that's largely where these partnerships, oftentimes that's a vector for how these partnerships come into being. But what I see is that it's really hard, especially for newer tech vendors that are maybe not that well known, are not that large yet. Maybe they're still what we would consider startup phase. They're sub $50 million AR. They oftentimes they go for the throat, right? They'll reach out to an agency principal, they'll send them an email, they'll try to ring them on the phone, they'll try to send them a DM on LinkedIn. And I can tell you, as somebody who has led the technical practice, the implementation practice within agencies, the amount of bombardment that you get is just pretty overwhelming at times. And it has to be someone and something pretty special to get any kind of cut through for me to even want to spend 15 minutes on a call with them cold. And what a lot of partnership managers don't yet fully grasp is how expensive, time-consuming, and complex it is for these agencies to build a practice around a new piece of technology. It's not just, oh, we'll be a partner, we'll recommend it into the right situations, and we'll figure out as we go. No, they need to devote development resources. They need to develop partnership resources to that. They need to build collateral around that. They need to develop messaging and go-to-market around that. They need to integrate it into their tech stack and figure out where that's going to fit and how and in what design patterns does it work best for the merchant. There's a lot of energy and time and effort and money, just cold hard cash, that has to be invested when you take on a new partner. And sometimes I feel like tech vendor partnership leads don't fully, because they've never been on the other side. They've never worked on the agency side. So they don't really know what's involved and what kind of investment is required to do that partnership justice. And as a result, they think it's an easy decision for an agency to make. And they treat it as an easy, quick decision. And it's just not. And maybe you can speak to that a little bit, because you've been on both sides now.
Yes. Yeah. No, this is definitely a question that's very close to my heart. I think, and this is one way that I mentioned that I often do that flashback, look back into the previous life of agency life. And I love agency life. Like, it's hectic, it's fast paced. There's always something happening. You've got a lot of merchants who want a lot of time. And to that point, and to your point, a lot of tech vendors who want your time. And I think, you know, it's interesting timing, because I'm going through this process now and I'm really like building out this partnership program with every lesson I've learned in the past. But it's really, you mentioned going wide and deep, and I think that's really important to hit on as well. But one thing I'm trying to do a little bit more, and you hear this all the time, it's like, what's your ICP of your ideal sort of merchant for agency? And it's, okay, we're both going after the same ICP. An agency owner wants new business, right? That's their lifeblood. No matter how good their retention is, no matter how good their account management is, times are interesting or sales are down, or the world economy is essentially the way it is at the moment, there is downturn. So agencies have a downturn in staff due to merchants not retaining them for services, or, hey, we're going to delay that upgrade to Shopify Plus until next year, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the thing to remember is that you, exactly what you said, time is money for agency. It's there's no other commodity that means more is cash flow and time. So being able to have good systems in place, being able to understand that principle first, the fact that, okay, agency partner manager who's just finished college, who works for X, Y, and Z SaaS vendor, you have to really respect the time. Don't put an hour-long meeting in your Calendly link and give no option for the agency owner to have a quick 15-minute conversation with you. Make sure that you send over short, sharp materials. No one's going to read a 10-page deck because you spent a lot of time making it pretty with the partner marketing team. You've got to be very concise, but you also have to have a really good understanding of that agency. So find out what projects they're winning. Connect with other people on that team within LinkedIn. Find out what their backgrounds are. Once again, it comes back to being caring and curious, right? So it's, hey, I noticed that you're posting and looking for a new account manager. I know X and Y in my network who might be a good fit. Or do you want me to share this with my network? How can I actually add value before I then turn around and expect you to take on this service? Because it's a very impossible task to expect someone to do that. I think too, and I'm very lucky to know some amazing agency owners here in the US, back home in Australia, people like Brendan Rawson at ANZEN, here locally, Steph Liu at Levitate Foundry, just these amazing people that I genuinely am friends with outside of work, right? And being able to understand that, okay, Steph, I'm not going to bother you this week because I know you've got two podcasts you're doing, you're filming this, you're launching this project for Bella Hadid's makeup company. I'm going to leave you alone. You know what I mean? Being conscious and caring of those things. Once again, it's like managing those relationships properly. But to your point of being able to help build this into practice, I've been doing some consulting on a project, on a tech project that we're going to be utilizing at GrowWave, which is really exciting. We're going to be beta testers of it. And I've been consulting on this, and it's this sort of technology piece, I think, will fill a lot of that gap. So being able to really build in proper education modules, not just a, hey, click on this link, spend 10 minutes clicking through some slides, accepting it, and now you're a master certified sort of user of this tech product, but really building it from the perspective of an agency. How can this create so much value for their merchants that the merchant is stickier with the agency and then in turn stickier with the technology? Because that's what everyone wants, right? So it's like, how can we show that this delivers so much value for the merchant that you need to be there to implement side by them because you're the expert, and that the product or the tech vendor is so in tune with what the merchant wants that it's a no-brainer. And I think that's one really good thing. And I don't mean to give a shameless plug to GrowWave, but the thing that really made me make that decision to go with them is I love products that are built to solve problems at an affordable cost with the merchant in mind and with the agency in mind. It's perfect when you get that. When you have a look at some other tech vendors that have historically done incredibly well with agency partners and channel partners, a lot of them aren't doing that anymore because it's purely focused now on, we have X valuation, or we have X IPO, or we have X event coming up. And then that whole actual caring component gets shifted to the side. And that's a difficult thing that I think a lot of tech vendors are facing at the moment, is like those KPIs and OKRs start becoming a bit too much of a focal point, as opposed to what at the end of the day is the main focal point, and that's providing a very valuable product at a very affordable price to a merchant and doing that through channel partners and making them look good. Because at the end of the day, that's what we should be doing as tech vendors and tech partners, is making agency channel partners look really good and empowering them.
I think you raised two really good points that resonate with me and that I've experienced firsthand. One is, there is one thing that any tech vendor can do to get my attention and will get cut through more than anything else. And that is wanting to understand my ICP so that they can position me with them as a potential consultant, for example, or in the case when I was with an agency, as an agency. It's, hey, I'd like to get to know you better, Mr. Agency Partner, Miss Agency Partner, Mr. Consultant, Miss Consultant. I'd like to get to know you. I would like to get to know your specialization. I would like to get to know your ICP so that I can position you as an expert with my clients that need services like yours. So instead of saying, I'm going to educate you on how to position me and my technology, no, I'm going to position you with my opportunities that I'm generating out in the market that are coming through the door because of our outbound GTM motion with merchants. I want to position you with them as an expert in the right situations and scenarios so that you can obviously come on board, you can put them in a position to win, and therefore potentially help get our technology over the line, because they're going to need someone like you to be able to do the architecture of the overall stack, right? The holistic architecture of the solution. They're going to need, we're just one piece. We're one piece. We realize that we're only one piece. We're not the whole stack. And so therefore, our clients need someone like you to be able to look holistically at the entire thing. So that's the first thing that will get my attention is, hey, I want to learn who you are, what you do, what you specialize in, what makes you unique, and then so that I can position you to potentially win more business from my clients that I can recommend to you. So that's the first thing. So basically trying to say, look, instead of me saying, you're going to send business to me, no, I want to send business to you, but I want it to be the right kind of business. So I need to get to know you better. So that's the first thing. If someone opens with that kind of salvo and dialogue, that's much more likely to get my attention than, hey, I'd love to tell you about our amazing technology that I think is going to help your clients so that you can become a partner and recommend our product to our client, your clients. That's the first thing. Second thing is, there is nothing more that will turn me off faster to a partner manager and a partner discussion than when someone says, hey, why don't you just sign up to be a partner so that when the opportunity comes along to position us, we're already ready to go. First of all, I know the only reason you're pushing for that is because you are KPI'd on the number of partners. Not, it doesn't matter the quality of the partner. It doesn't matter whether they're actually going to drive business for you. It doesn't matter the quality of the relationship. It's just numbers on a screen that says, hey, we signed up 3 new partners this month, and one of those was Greenwood Consulting. So you're just ticking a box. Whereas me, on the other side, if I know a technology and what it does and what it's capable of, I will recommend it before I'm a partner. And then if it looks like there's a legit deal that we can work together and we can pursue together that's a great fit for both of us, then at that point, we've got all the time in the world to sign a partnership agreement when there's a live deal that we're working together. I don't need to sign a partnership agreement 12 months in advance for something that may happen 12 months in the future. That's a waste of my time. I got to sign the MNDA. I got to read the contract. I got to negotiate. I got to do all those things. And it's going to probably take me several hours of back and forth before we actually get an inked deal for a partnership agreement when I am not even sure whether there's ever going to be an opportunity to work with you on a deal anyway. So yes. I think those two things stand out to me in my engagement with partners that are constantly trying to sell me. The people that realize that I only want to consider signing a partnership deal when there's a live opportunity that we're working on jointly, that's the only time that it matters to me. And two, if you approach me wanting me to act as your salesperson in channel and that's your primary focus, then we're not going to get along. And those are the two things that stand out to me. Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And just to add to that point, that's why I think I'm less so going wide and more so going deep. I really want to work with people that I love, to get along with people that I'm happy to catch up with once a week, who also want to catch up with me once a week, and really get strategic, brainstorm some cool thought leadership sort of things that we can do together in market. There's a partner who we've recently had on board, and I haven't even been on board that long at GrowWave, but I've essentially onboarded 3 key partners. Now, yes, I could go a lot wider than that and do that, but the reason I'm doing that is because I know these agencies' ICP. I know it aligns with our ICP. I know there's opportunities for them. I know that we can do cool things in market together that aren't just your run-of-the-mill throw together a dinner, spend some time having drinks at Shop Talk. These are like very strategic, cool opportunities that are creative that we can work on together and bring a ton of value to each other's organizations, but most of all, bring a lot of value to merchants. And that's the winning combination in my mind.
And I think that a lot of partnership managers don't realize how much of a magnet for partners they could be if they were doing all the same things that they praise me for doing, and why, and all the things they say give as reasons why they want to partner with me. So usually when they approach me, they say, look, we see you putting out content. We love your content. We love your podcast. We love what you're doing in the market. We love how you're educating the market. We're sure that obviously that's how you're driving business. So I don't do any outbound marketing. Now, maybe at some point in the future, I will. But at the moment, and for the 3 years, over 3.5 years that I've been running this business, I haven't had to do any cold outbound at all. So I try to be a magnet versus a lasso is how I think of it. And I try to let my content and my educational work and my podcast and other things prove a level of expertise and knowledge and capability, and to attract my ICP to me instead of me trying to go out there and lasso them and suck them into me. And so when partner managers usually approach me, they first of all go through 5 bullet points of praise of saying, we love this, we love that, we love this, and we'd love to partner with you as a result. But what they don't realize is if they flipped the script and they were doing all, because they could do all the same things within reason that I'm doing, and they could be educating the market. They could have a podcast. They could be putting on events. They could be posting daily to LinkedIn. They could be doing all these things. They could be transparent. They could be open and honest. They could be building a public. They could be doing all those things that I'm doing. They could do that themselves. And then they, what they don't realize is they would be a magnet for people like me to come to them and say, hey, you guys are doing some really cool stuff that I think would be really helpful to some of my clients in these situations. Let's explore what a partnership might look like. And that's exactly what happens today. So if I'm not a partner with a specific technology, but then as part of a client engagement, I realize, okay, you need this component of a stack. You maybe need this specific technology to meet a specific requirement, a business need in your business, but I'm not a partner of those technologies yet. Yeah. But I will go out there and I will, on behalf of the client, I will go through a search and select process alongside them. I will help run demos for them. I will help schedule the demos for them. I will reach out to those technology vendors when the time is right. And then at that point, I'll say, oh, and by the way, do you have a formal partnership program with enablement and collateral and all those things that I need to represent your product the best way possible in market? What does your partner program look like? I will reach out when the time is right. But if those technologies were more visible, then they would be on my radar constantly. But because they are not acting like I do in market, they have to be a lasso because they are not acting like a magnet. And I think that's a missed opportunity by those technology vendors to behave more like an independent consultancy and an independent influencer and content creator. They're missing a massive trick in that, in my opinion.
I agree a lot there, Jason. And I think to that point, it's interesting. And I think that goes a step above, right? In terms of when we're looking at that, the smaller and more bootstrapped and everything like that, the more startup-y, the more agile you can be with doing those things. But I think what we're seeing, and this kind of talks to that evolution and that shift in the tide we're talking about, is that when the partnerships becomes purely a revenue-based activity, you do not have the ability or the pull to be able to implement that. If that is a big part of what that sort of outcome is supposed to look like from a revenue perspective. But I think the partnerships function needs to have definitely some accountability, right? We talk about that, and there has to be OKRs and all of that relevance. But when it's tied more to a marketing function, that's when you have the ability to really be able to deliver that valuable content like you do to your audience and to your growing audience. So to that point, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think that's why so much of my focus and approach, particularly in this new role with GrowWave, is really around that valuable and that value-driven content and spotlighting agencies and really focusing more on those kind of value adds and giving away that knowledge and being helpful. And once again, coming back to that sort of caring and curiosity component.
Yeah, I think it also just means you have to have some empathy. Like you have to have some empathy for all the other things that consultancies, agencies, other partners, even complementary tech partners that you may want to integrate with. For example, if you're a Klaviyo, for example, you're gonna be building out an ecosystem, and Klaviyo's done a really good job of building out that tech ecosystem where they've got a ton of out-of-the-box integrations, where for a lot of brands, it becomes a no-brainer, at least as their very first marketing automation platform. It becomes a no-brainer because of the sheer volume of technical partnerships that Klaviyo has in the market that you can just plug in, turn on. It's literally drag and drop configuration for most of these integrations. And it becomes the sum of the parts, or the whole becomes greater than the sum of the parts, right? So in the Klaviyo world, for example, whether you love or hate Klaviyo, the reality is that they are an 800-pound gorilla in the space. And they have managed to amass so many complementary tech partnerships that for a new brand that doesn't have the money or the expertise or the capability to develop a whole bunch of bespoke system integrations between, say, a CDP and other systems in their business, Klaviyo becomes the default choice. And I think a lot of tech vendors, they overlook the necessity and the importance and the value of a default integrated ecosystem that gets wrapped around their technology. And in many respects, that is even more important than, say, agency or channel partners. Because the reality is, if you become the default choice because of how easy it is to drop your technology into their stack, then you become the default choice. And I think a lot of tech vendors, they overlook the importance of strategic technical partnerships and integrations. And in my opinion, that is usually the fastest route to market versus trying to build out a channel partner-led sales model.
I could not agree more. And I think there's a couple of points to unpack there, but I couldn't agree more. So one thing that's really important to note with that, I think, is the fact that when it comes to Klaviyo, incredible what they've done over there. The people like Rob Gibson, Rich Gardner, Ian, like the list goes on. I love that team so much. And I love Klaviyo and I love what they do. And I think they're an amazing success story, essentially. And I think they'll continue to be. So that's one really clear thing to mention. But you're right. Another reason why I really rode wave is this all-in-one kind of a model, but not doing too much. Because I think that can be an issue too. So the fact that you're able to have reviews and loyalty working together and not siloing them and having them as separate things. The fact that you're able to have social sign-in, UGC, all of those components that work really well together are important. But without that automation platform, without that central automation piece, which we have with Klaviyo, there's no adoption, essentially. And so many agencies know that, and so many agencies work with Klaviyo so closely. So the ultimate, in my mind, and I've done events with Klaviyo in the past, is agency, that centerpiece technology, and you as a tech vendor. If you can have that trifecta working together around all of the initiatives we discussed earlier, that's a real winner. That's a real winner. And it's a real winner for the merchant. That's the thing, right? Is that when there's that seamlessness between the center point piece of technology, as well as connecting with their Shopify or their BigCom or anything like that, then all of these tech stacks working together, not operating on an island, that's heaven for the agency and for the merchant. So I couldn't agree more. And you're right, it is an overlooked point, but I think the brands that are winning or the tech vendors that are winning are looking at that closely.
And how much do you think, like when I think back across some of the great partnerships that I've formed over the years, a lot of those have developed out of interpersonal relationships formed through more intimate, private, it feels like almost like an invite-only kind of an event. It's oftentimes maybe it's a dinner. It's a private room at a bar that's hired out. The thing is, none of these things have to cost a fortune. But what they have to do is they have to create an environment and an opportunity for more personal, vulnerable conversations is what they have to do, right? And so when I think back and when I look at the friendships that I've built in the partnership community over the years, I would say at least half of those have been developed through smaller, more intimate kind of invite only, where maybe they'll invite, maybe a tech vendor, for example, will invite one or two tech partners. They'll invite one or two maybe existing merchant partners. They'll invite maybe two or three current working opportunities in conjunction with maybe an agency or something like that. And so we're talking, these events tend to be less than 20 to 30 people. They tend to be in maybe that 20 to 30 person range. And those seem to me even more so than big conferences. And although at conferences, an interesting situation happens. If a tech vendor sponsors, say, a small after party that's associated with an event, that's easy because people are already there en masse. And it's easy for them to just, okay, the conference ends at 5 p.m. today. At 5:30 p.m., we've booked out this private room at this bar. Come along. We're going to have some bar snacks. We're going to put on some drinks. And everybody's welcome to come, for example. Or maybe it's invite-only. I've actually seen invite-only versions of that work super well. And I'm thinking back even to the most recent conference that I spoke at. I went to an after-party dinner, actually physically at the same venue as the conference. And this is a technology that I would have never even remotely considered working with previously. And I haven't signed anything with them yet, but I'm much more likely to consider them in the right scenario now that I know the team behind the technology, now that I've met some of them, that I literally sat down and had dinner and drinks with some of them, that I know more about their personal life, that I just feel more connected to them as a brand now that I've got to know them. And so it's maybe it'll take two more, three of these types of events for me to really get to know them well enough to feel like I could really position them in the right environment. But it's definitely, it's opened the door to the opportunity. Whereas before it would, before the this specific instance that I'm thinking of, that would have never been the case. They would just have never even been on my radar. And so I think that it feels like the more intimate event that feels so unscalable, that sometimes the best results come out of the stuff that is the least scalable.
Oh, yeah, I certainly couldn't agree more. I think being able to, once again, it's that relationship building, and it's much easier to build a relationship in a smaller, intimate, connected, safe, non-overwhelming environment. And that's what you get at these dinners. That's what you get at these happy hour sponsored events. Whereas when you're on a conference floor and you go past 20 people and everyone's saying hello, and then someone's tapping you on the shoulder and saying, you've got to meet so-and-so, it's a whirlwind. So I think those intimate events really play a key, and people who organize those events really well can pull in the right people to those events. You want someone who's really extroverted. You want someone who's a little bit more shy and reserved, but open up when they're in those environments. You want people who are experts at those events. Some of those events have been, in my opinion, some of the best conversations I've had in my life, not just in my career. So once again, it's really about having the right connection and having that curiosity from everyone attending.
Yeah, and I think making it, I guess, also attractive. Like in the case of me, like my wife came to this particular conference with me. And so the fact that they also said, you can bring a plus one, like it's something like that sounds so dumb. But if they hadn't have said to me, you're more than welcome to bring a plus one, if they hadn't have said that in the invite to me, the digital invite to me that said, hey, this is an invite only event. We would love for you to come along. We'd love to have some great. And there was no sales pitch. There was literally not a single sales pitch that happened at this dinner. There was no conversation about their technology. There was nobody standing up and saying, oh, and by the way, we sponsored this event. And oh, hey, if you want to learn more, talk to Bob or Jane over here about becoming a partner. There was literally no conversation about their technology. We all knew it was there. The sign was at the front door. Hey, this event sponsored, delivered by X Technology. It's sometimes the little things. It's the fact that when they sent the invite, they said, you're more than welcome to bring a plus one. Like I wouldn't have gone to that event if they hadn't said that, because my wife was with me and we're going out to dinner together. I was going to leave my wife in the hotel room and I was going to go to this private dinner without her. That would never have happened. And so sometimes it's the little things, and it is the empathy. It is the knowledge that you're going to have potential people there that have their partners along for the ride. It's all those little tiny sensitive things. It's when we walked in, the fact that they had meat and they had vegetarian and they had vegan options at the event. They provided an open bar for not just alcohol, but non-alcoholic drinks. They went out of their way. The people that organized the event from the marketing team of that technology, they were literally going around and grabbing people by the arm. Oh, you got to meet them. You got to meet them. You really have to get to know this person. They really know their shit in this area. I think you guys would have a great conversation. So they were being a catalyst of people not feeling like they had to cold go up and say, oh, hi, my name's Jason. Hey, how are you here? They were by hand introducing people together and making them feel welcome so that you didn't have to go cold introduce yourself to people. And I just think that all of these little things, they sound so insignificant, but they can turn something that is a very average partner-led event to something that's like this. I'm talking about it to you now because they crossed so many T's and dotted so many I's that it stuck in my mind, and I had so much fun at that event. And it doesn't take that much to get it right, does it?
Yeah, I could not agree more with that. I think, yes, it might be the little things that you do along the way, but it's one of those sayings, and I remember this, and I'm sure a million people have heard this from their parents over the years, but it's like how you do the little things is how you do the big things. And I also think a combination of doing those little things over and over and over, you become a master of that and a master in being able to provide value. It's the same as what you do, right? It's like you have consistently put out valuable content day after day, week after week, year after year to your audience. And that is memorable and that adds value. And because of that, it's as you said earlier in the episode, you don't have to outbound advertise. You don't have to do those things because you're providing so much value. You're attracting your ICP. You're attracting that to you and you're attracting people who want to help you. So I think it's very much the same as with that. It's like being a good facilitator, being a helpful person, those things will come naturally.
Yeah, I think what goes around comes around. There is a, whether you believe in karma or not, it seems to absolutely be a thing. You put out good things into the universe and good things tend to come back to you, right? They say, quote unquote, nice guys finish last, but I actually haven't found that to be true over the long, maybe in the short term, but in the long term, absolutely not. Good people finish first in the long term. So I think it also depends on what your intent is. If your intent is to build friendships, to build relationships, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that started out a partnership with me at one company, but now they're three companies down the line and we still have a relationship today. And so it's a much easier discussion. Once they end up at that third or fourth company down the track, it's much easier for them to come to me and say, hey, Jace, let's have a conversation about this new thing I'm working on, because I have a vested interest in their success. I have a vested interest in their future. I genuinely care about them as a human being and I want to see them be successful and I want to figure out ways I can help them be successful. So I think that, and you're a prime example of that. We built a years ago, and now you're at a new company, and now I want to have a vested interest in trying to make sure that you are a success in your new role. And so I think it is literally just a case of what goes around comes around.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you for the kind words. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's like that saying of never burn bridges, always be building them. It's so true. And it's interesting because I think in a way, it's like just having that ethos. It's like we mentioned earlier, the amount of crossover that you and I have on a level. And it's, I have no doubt we're going to continue to be great friends going forward. And I can't wait to catch up properly, but it's interesting that. And I think maybe that is the mindset that connects people in partnerships is like paying it forward and adding value. So yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it.
Absolutely. Now, as we come down to the close of our time together, and I super appreciate your time today, Joe, your wealth of knowledge, your wealth of experience in this space. And I've never been a partner manager at a tech vendor before. It's the people that have the trifecta. They've maybe perhaps had their own e-commerce business. They've worked agency side, plus they've maybe worked a vendor side. And that's the one part of the trifecta I haven't done is been a partnerships manager. But if you met someone today who's brand new to the partnerships game, it's their first partnerships gig. They've never done it before. They maybe are pretty young. Maybe it might even be their first role, full stop, in the professional world, or maybe not. But what would be your top tip, your top one piece of advice if they're new to this game and they started out during the pandemic? And so that's all they know. And that's the only playbook that they know is maybe this cold outbound playbook, this selfish minded playbook. Yes. What would be your top tip to them to say, hey, if you want to be successful in this game for the long term, this is one thing I think you really need to double down on and double click on?
To keep it super, super short and simple, my short answer, my TLDR would be listen more, talk less, 1000%. Listen to the partners, understand them. And then when you do talk, be sure to be adding value and being helpful, not asking for something, giving as opposed to asking.
Absolutely love that. And I'd love to add to this and say, if you can think of yourself as a super connector, full stop. I think of myself as a super connector. I love it when people come to me and they say, hey, Jace, do you know anybody in this space? Do you know anybody in this space? Do you know anybody at this company? And I get messages multiple times a week from people saying, do you know? And I am very happy. I did it this morning. I took a call. out of the blue from a tech company. They're a startup. They're based in Israel. They're doing some really cool stuff. I wouldn't even normally take a call, but just the guy was really persistent. He wanted to meet with me. He booked a 20-minute call. So it was a short, sweet, to the point call. He did a really short demo of his technology. It was really amazing. I've never seen anything like it before. And I offered to him, I said, I think you need to meet this person over here. And I think they would potentially either make a great strategic or technical partner. But more importantly, I think they could even potentially be a board level advisor for you as you're looking to develop your go-to-market play for this technology. This person is so well connected in the industry. They're going to open a ton of doors for you. So I think they would make a fantastic board level advisor. And in fact, one of my current clients came from exactly that same kind of introduction. Somebody else that I knew in the industry, they are on a board of a company. They have another person on the board that has is the CEO of a tech vendor. And they were looking for a strategic board advisor. And so my friend recommended me to them and said, hey, I think Jason would be a great fit for you. I think he would really be helpful for you as a board advisor. And I got that role specifically through a one-to-one introduction from somebody that I've known for 6 or 7 years. And you just never know where those relationships will take you or where your relationship with them will be able to help. But I think if you think of yourself as more than partnerships, if you just think of yourself, I am a super connector. So I am trying to help build as a web of connections as I can for as many people as I can, because as that saying goes, the more people you help, the more you will be helped. It's just the nature of the game, isn't it?
I love that. And it's that's spot on. I literally can't add anything to that because it's so spot on, but it's true. It's the more value you add, the more value will come your way. Simple.
Let's finish on a high note. That was fantastic. Now, I will put your LinkedIn profile link. I will put in the GrowWave link into the show notes. How do you like people to get a hold of you outside of LinkedIn and GrowWave?
LinkedIn is honestly the best way to get a hold of me. Like I live and breathe LinkedIn. Same. I know you're the same. I'm very open to talking to people on LinkedIn. If there's anything I can do or anyone has any further questions, please DM me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to help.
Love it. Joe, thank you so much for your time. I super appreciate it. And I can't wait to do this again soon. I appreciate you being a guest mentor today. And I am certain that the audience will get as much out of this conversation as I did. So thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason. It's an honor and something, as I mentioned at the start of the episode, a podcast I've always wanted to be on. So I've ticked off one for the bucket list. So thank you for adding value to me there.
If you'd like to get mentored by Jason for free, head over to greenwoodconsulting.net, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click Get Mentored by Jason.